Red blood cells, other cells. The image rippled through my mind, exactly the way my child was rid of her body parts. I would never know, but I chose to believe she was a girl. The shrill cry of my baby exploded in my ears the way it did every night. I ran towards her, extended my hands, and tried to catch her, but Claire took her even far away. I didn't understand. Weren't mothers supposed to be protective of their children? Her legs were gone now. I watched from afar with a broken heart as the sharp blade terminated the rest of her. I cried in agony. My baby was flushed like she was merely a menstrual flow. The contentment in her mother's eyes as she narrated the story threw jabs of double-edged daggers through my heart. I clung tightly to my chest, trying to put it in place, but a quick breath and it flew out with an exhale. I sprung awake, panting like a 100-meter athlete. Another nightmare. Nightmares that wouldn't have occurred if Claire hadn't confessed her abortion 2 weeks ago, the day before she went missing. Her confession still pricked my heart, still injured me, and made me cry once in a while. Who knew a 45-year-old man could cry due to the loss of his child, a child that wasn't given a chance at life, a chance to love? Perhaps it wouldn't have hurt so badly if I didn't have so much wish and longing for a child in the past 5 years. I had waited since the day I married Claire for the chance to be a father. Yet because she wanted to move up the corporate ladder, she gave up our child at my expense. More than her disappearance, my loss was hurtful. I scampered into the bathroom and washed my face and mouth. I went out to the sitting room and picked up my laptop to write. My editor had called before I went to sleep, and I needed to finish a story soon. And so I wrote. I looked up at the wall clock in my room. It was some minutes before 11 p.m. Claire would enter the house soon. The sitting room was rough, and my laptop was wide open, probably dead. I forgot to plug in the charger before taking this quick nap, and it didn't shut down either. The curtain was still up, and the room was cold. Nylons, packets, and bottles littered the floor. I rubbed my eyes and stretched before standing up to tidy the room. I picked up the plastic bottles and dusted the couch. I washed a few plates by the sink, wiped the kitchen counter clean, and swept the floor of the sitting room. The clock struck 11 p.m. as soon as I was done sweeping. Claire came in through the back door. She was dressed in black pants and a sky blue peplum top. The hatred in my heart burned more. She had a bottle of wine in her hand, my favorite color, my favorite wine. The woman knew how to play her cards. "You're still digging?" she said, and glanced towards the backyard, where I had spent the most parts of my day. "It's for my garden," I answered without interest. She drew closer to me and placed a hand on my cheek. I could see the remorse and pity in her eyes. She killed my child and felt pity for me? A wicked woman indeed. "You need to get over the abortion, Adam. Another child will come, and we will cherish the child together," she whispered on my face, and I hissed. I pushed her hands off, and she walked away towards the kitchen counter. "I'll pour you some wine." I trod after her and flung her hands off our glass, my glass. She screamed. I pushed her away from the kitchen towards the door and outside. "Go away," I hissed. I heard her footsteps retreating, and in a few minutes, the house was surrounded by silence. Soon, she came in again, through the back door, and I hissed, annoyed with myself for forgetting to lock it. "I'm sorry," she begged, and I saw it in her eyes. Maybe she sacrificed our baby for her own life, but wasn't willing to sacrifice our relationship, our marriage. I felt sorry for her. I ran towards her and enveloped her in a hug. For the first time since she told the abortion story, my stomach knotted at the thought. "Can we drink the wine now?" she asked, and I nodded. The smile reached her eyes as she disentangled and picked another set of wine glasses from the shelf. She poured our wine and brought it over to the sofa where I was already seated. She raised her red-filled glass for a toast and said, "To future babies." I puked, but clanked the glass that made the drink spill on my clothes. I jerked back and stood, setting my glass in front of her. She flashed a coy smile, and I went into the room to change my dirtied shirt. I returned in a minute and downed the rest of my glass. Once I took the last drop, the pain began. I called her name, but she walked away from me. Her eyes were cold, and I almost couldn't recognize her. She watched me roll in pain and clench my stomach, my throat, and my joints. I thought I must have looked like my baby would have when the doctor dismembered her with his murder weapon. In the last moments of my life, I jerked and shook and coughed like a car with a faulty engine. I struggled to breathe, and Claire gasped like she'd been holding her breath forever. I thought I heard her mutter, "Mission accomplished." The content in her eyes was louder than when she spoke of the aborted baby. She dragged me effortlessly by the leg to the backyard, towards the ground I had dug all day. She rolled me into it and buried me while I struggled to catch my breath. I was silenced, the same as my child. I punched the end and smiled at myself in victory. Quickly, I saved the file and attached it to my email before sending it to my editor. That was supposed to be enough for now. I stood from where I sat, walked towards the kitchen, and filled a wine glass with some white wine. While sipping from the glass, I took a stroll to the backyard. The whimpers that rang only in my ears from the backyard had gotten even quieter. The backyard was beautiful and full of flowers. No one could ever guess that underneath the flower bed was Claire, my missing wife. I sipped some more wine and relished in the contentment that following writing the murder of my wife in the reversed version. Being a victim was a good way to lift guilt. I was the perfect husband, she was the wicked wife, and no one knew that the woman I reported missing was buried alive by me. I chuckled and went back into the house. Anyone who didn't love working from home probably did not just know how wonderful it was. It shuts you off from the world. Truly, but the peace that came with knowing you are working in your comfort zone and well relaxed to do whatever you need to do could not be argued by anybody. I had more than enough points to argue it. "Julia, I'm off," my husband yelled from the sitting room before leaving. He was a police officer and had just been called. There was a case they needed him to work on. I was always proud of him. He was smart and knew what to do for every case he somehow got his hands on. I didn't bother yelling back or saying anything since we already discussed it earlier. I already knew he was gone. I was going to lock the door as soon as I was done with packing the laundry I was busy with. "Duke, is that you?" I called back when I heard the door open again. I would not be surprised if he was the one. He always forgot something and needed to come back to get it. I didn't receive any reply. He must not have heard me. I continued with the laundry. I had an important job waiting for me in the next 30 minutes. I had just a few minutes left to finish whatever it was I was doing. I heard the door open and close again. I was sure that my husband must have picked whatever he'd forgot and left. Eventually, after a few minutes, I sat down to face my laptop. I had a few minutes before the job. It was a Zoom call where I was going to have to share ideas for a new position I was applying for. I couldn't rely on more than one job to survive. I needed jobs that I could do from home. Emphasis on the jobs. The call was between two people, the CEO of the company I was interviewing for, according to what I heard. The first thing I could not help but notice when the call started was the resemblance to one of the walls in one of the rooms of my house. I ignored it. It was probably the same person who did the two and was out of ideas before deciding to use something he had used before. Still, I wanted to check the room, but the call had already started. I couldn't possibly do that. It was only going to show that I was not serious about the job I claimed to have desperately needed. The questions and answers went on for a while, until she asked us to take a break. It was weird that she would ask us to, since the meeting was basically questions and answers and was supposed to end. What would have been left was to expect a result from their company. Either way, I could not complain, Anyhow their company ran, I could as well get used to it in case I eventually worked there. I could almost swear that I heard voices in the same room during the interview, but I still ignored it. I was the kind of person who imagined things a lot, and it was probably just my mind and head playing tricks on me, I hoped. Guess the job's yours if you do what I need you to do. I turned around to the face of the woman I had been talking to on the Zoom call. Yes, I came in through the door. Don't ask. I wasn't going to. She must have been the one who entered when I thought it was my husband who forgot something. Either way, I waited to hear whatever I had to do. She was the boss of the company, and it was already enough privilege to have her stand in front of me. She smiled at me before going ahead to say what she wanted me to do. Take off all your clothes and kiss me. I was shocked and disgusted at the sound of it. How was that even possible, to get naked in front of her and kiss her? All because I wanted a job? The questions kept running through my mind. Could I really blame her? I needed a job and found myself in her trap. I was scared of saying no to her. She was in my house and could pull any trick. I didn't know what else she was hiding. I needed another way to communicate what I was feeling to her. Disgust. Frustration. How could she even think of asking me such a thing? Did I appear so desperate? I had a child that was sleeping peacefully in the next room. I could not do that to myself for sure, or to my husband as a sign of disrespect. Out! Out of anger, I stood my ground and ordered her out of my house. Where did the confidence come from? I didn't know, but one thing I was sure of was the fact that I wasn't going to be found working for such a person. I'd rather do worse, noble things. Oh, you shouldn't have yelled. You're going to regret that now. I got scared when she said the sentence. She was confident, which meant she had a plan already. It would have been easier if I could somehow read her mind, but her expression was quite the opposite of whatever she had on her mind. She was all smiles on the outside, but with the words that came out of her mouth, her mind could not be anything less than filthy. She grabbed my neck with so much force that I lost control. My daughter had begun to cry in her room from all the shouting. She couldn't walk yet. I tried to beg her, but she wouldn't hear any of that. She had already started to pull some of my clothing with a wicked smile on her face and a camera placed over my face. She was much stronger than I was. Trying to fight with her was pointless. Was I going to give up my dignity without a fight? Julia! I heard my husband's voice before the next sound and the third one that followed. A gunshot and my daughter changing the gear of her crying to a louder one. I turned around and the woman was on the floor with her camera. My husband had shot her in the leg. At that point, I could only hope whatever just happened was not going to put my husband in trouble. He could possibly have an advantage, self-defense, if it looked like it. I hugged my husband before going to attend to my daughter, who was crying her eyes out already at that point. What a day. We sat in the drive-in watching our favorite movie, Hannibal. Bryce and I had been dating for over 2 weeks now, and this was our second date. We both loved the coziness of the drive-in, and the way it felt more real than the more conventional Netflix people watched these days. Wendy's eatery just around the corner made it quite easy to order some snacks without missing much. We've both seen Hannibal before, but had decided on seeing it again. I need to use, I told Bryce before pressing a kiss on his lips, then jumped out of the car. I crunched, trying not to disturb their movie, but a few people still screamed, "Get out of the way!" when I walked past their car. For those, I stood up, made sure to take my time before strolling to the next car, and on. I reached the restroom, but the crowd outside irked me. I groaned, feeling the pressure in my bladder growing. I'd never been the type to hold it in. I turned, searching for an escape. My eyes rested on the eatery, the light glowing from the signboard. I hurried towards it, crossing to the other side of the street. I pushed open the door. There were only a few people there. Most had already purchased whatever they wanted and headed straight to the drive-in. I rushed to the door, to the left, with the sign saying restroom. I don't know how long I spent in there, because I always had a habit of scrolling through my phone once I was in the restroom. But when I stepped out, everything felt different. Wendy's was completely devoid of staff. There was absolutely pin-drop silence. I slowly stepped outside and returned to my car. I was shocked to see the whole field empty. Like not a soul was there. Only our car stood at its spot. I hurried towards it, only to find it empty too. As I turned my gaze towards the screen, a gush of cold wind blew past my ears. There was something hanging from it. I got closer to the screen and could now make out a lifeless body hanging. I gasped as my brain scrambled to make sense of the whole scene. "What's going on?" I asked myself. I kept walking closer, my gaze fixed on the body. It hung limply, as though someone had done it hastily. I inched closer, the same curiosity driving the rest to stare at the body pushing towards it. As I reached the front of the drive-in, my heart stopped. My throat suddenly felt parched. The world around me was spinning too fast. Too fast, it didn't make any sense. "No!" I screamed. My legs crumpled under my weight. All of a sudden, the rope broke and the body fell on the ground. I raced towards it, shaking him hard, tears pooling down my eyes. My whole world was tearing at its seams. Just as I lay sobbing on Bryce's cold body, a deafening laughter boomed from the speakers. My heart pounded in my chest. I stared at Bryce. If he were alive, he would have told me to run. But he was not, and I could not leave him there. I could not leave him dead. I searched desperately for help. Anyone. It was then when I saw him. He stood there, dressed in all black. I blinked, thinking he would disappear, but he was real. As real as Bryce being dead. And he was looking at me. I took a step back, but he remained still. He charged towards me, axe raised. Without thinking, my legs took to motion. I raced back to Wendy's, not sparing a glance to see if he was following behind. Not that I needed it. He was definitely following behind. I could feel him drawing nearer with each second. I pushed open the door, locking it almost immediately with the wiper. My whole body was trembling now, every inch of me pounding hard. I reached for my phone. It slipped off my hand and landed face flat on the floor. The man collided with the glass door. I jerked, a scream of terror escaping me. He watched me. His eyes were filled with callous intent. He grinned, revealing brown teeth. I took a step back, stepping on my phone. His eyes darted to the phone the same time as I did. I reached for the phone just as he slammed the door open with his axe, the glass shattering. A scream escaped my mouth as I raced towards the counter, finding the door to the inner room. It was open. I stepped in, shutting the door from behind with the bolt. I dialed 911. "Hello? Help! Help me!" I cried out. "Someone is trying to kill me!" As I reached beneath the counter to hide myself, my heart stopped. One of the attendants was hiding there too. I'd just led the killer to her. Oh, God! I walked to the storage door, pushing it open. I pulled out some flour, tossed it aside, then grabbed the cooking alcohol. I tossed some vegetable oil to the girl. "Heat this," I ordered. She nodded. We waited with bated breath as the door gave way. As he stepped in, I sprayed the alcohol, clicking the lighter simultaneously. Flames burst out of it, disrupting his vision. He swung blind. The blade tore through me, causing me to scream in pain. "Now!" I cried out. Before he realized what was going on, the girl threw the boiling oil over him. He screamed as the hot liquid burned his face. "Run!" I shouted to the girl. He still screamed in agony as we stepped out, racing outside. The police had arrived. "He's in there," the girl said, pointing towards the eatery. The policeman grabbed a hold of me, speaking into his walkie, requesting for an ambulance. "Just put pressure on it," he said once he finished, pressing hold of my stomach bleeding. My strength was wasting away with each passing second, but soon the ambulance arrived. I woke up in the hospital the next day. My vitals normal. Or were they? The killer was behind the bars, but he had taken Bryce away from me, from this world. Life would never be the same again.